Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of heroes has dawned and the path of public service unfolds tonight on the Diana Monfort Show. Greetings and welcome, Diana. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm doing great and I'm looking forward to your show tonight, as always.
Well, thank you so much. And I am Diana Monfort. I am transgender. I am the world's first transgender television journalist, and this is the podcast version of the Diana Monfort Show. We are heard the third Saturday of every month from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time, and you can hear us also. The shows are archived. You go to Hercules Invictus, and then you look up the Diana Monfort Show, and you will hear past shows and tonight's show and hopefully future shows. We have an amazing guest for tonight, a lady named Angela Brightfeather, a transgender woman who, among other things, founded an organization for trans military folk, people who were in the military and are trans, who is a lifelong and well-known activist who has fought against injustice all her life. And we are going to talk with her about her many endeavors regarding social justice for the trans community. And here she is, Ms. Angela Brightfeather. Hi there.
Hi, Diana. Hi, everyone that is listening or will be listening. Hi, the entire transgender community.
Now, tell us, now your name. To me, that sounds Native American, but you are not Native American. You were actually born in England.
That's correct. I was given the name.
By whom?
At a transgender ceremony that was held in near Asheville, North Carolina, actually in Hot Springs, North Carolina, where approximately 20 transgender people of various spiritual beliefs, and I'm talking various spiritual beliefs, everything from conventional type beliefs mostly, would gather once a year and go over and learn the ceremonies and the traditions of transgender people that were associated with different spiritual beliefs. I mean, we had Wiccans, we had everything but the conventional Baptists and
no
Christians.
Presbyterians they, allowed. I guess okay. Yes.
No, they weren't. No, we didn't bar them later on, but in the beginning, we sort of did, and we were looking for more diverse. Diverse people. We had spiritual people from Lapland, for instance. The Laps up from Lapland, they believed in living off of reindeer all their life. And they've developed a spiritual belief that was almost parallel and somewhat common to Native American spiritual beliefs. We had a lot of Celtic people, Druid-type people, that believed in Druidism and Celtic traditions. And what we
Well, you are Celtic, aren't you?
Pardon? Yes.
You are Celtic, aren't you?
Well, I was born in England, and I'm 48% British and 47% Irish and 3% Iberian, according to, you know, my breakdown of my DNA. And, yes, I associate with Great Britain quite a bit in the Celtic beliefs. And
I'm half Spanish, one quarter Scottish, one quarter Irish. So I,
yeah,
too, have Celtic blood.
Yeah, so I was getting to – I had to leave a little bit early. We were up on a place called it was a mountain in the middle of the Smokies. And – we were going over ceremony, we were doing dancing together. We were making music together. And we were meditating together. And we had a spirit circle going. And because we had a circle, in order for me to leave to go catch my plane a little bit early, I had to ask permission to leave the circle. So that's what happened. I started to go, and they said, no, wait a minute, come back. We have to give you that spiritually. Thank you for being here and give you good vibes going. And so I said, okay. So I got in the middle of the circle, and they started to step dance around me in a Native American woman's dance, the Iroquois woman's dance, actually, which we had been practicing that day. And I passed right out and went into a trance. And I was wearing a feather in my hat, my hair. I have long hair, and I had a feather tied to it. And I was out cold. And I finally woke up, and they said, you wouldn't believe what happened. I said, no, what happened? They said, the feather in your hair, it was shiny. It was almost, people said, oh, it's almost like the sun. It was almost like the sun. It is like the most wild thing we've seen. Everybody agreed. And they said, it was the brightest thing. It was a bright feather. And everybody looked at each other and went, bright feather. And that was it. That I said, okay, fine, thank you. That's my name.
Well, you know, I've always noticed that trans folk tend to be closer to metaphysics than most people. Many of us believe in reincarnation and believe that
yeah.
we were cisgender women in many previous lives, or cisgender men.
There. Yeah, we had Buddhists and Hindus there. Yeah, I mean, it was quite a gathering. It was pulled together by Holly Boswell, who was the person that defined transgender, the word transgender.
In other words, she coined the term.
Pardon?
She coined the term transgender.
Yeah, pretty much, and she defined it. She did a few articles for the Tapestry magazine about the name transgender. And
excuse me, Tapestry. Excuse me, Tapestry is a famous transgender magazine, which published for about 40 years, I believe.
Right. It was published by Marissa Sherrill Lynn and by Yvonne Cook Riley. And it came out of Waltham, Massachusetts. And it was a publication that was done for the IFGE, the International Foundation for Gender Education, which was formed by Marissa. So.
Wonderful. So, yeah. So now, it's not easy being transgender. It's not easy being anything, really, but it's really difficult to be transgender, and especially now with the culture wars raging and people wanting to eradicate us from the world stage and the world period. You are a veteran, I believe, and
yes.
of the armed forces. And
yes.
there are many transgender veterans of the armed forces, people who were cisgender when they were serving, but later transitioned. And they were getting no help.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
About four in ten. Four out of ten.
Four out of ten trans folk?
Yeah. Four out of ten transgender people is estimated as being veterans. Four out of ten.
Do people, you cannot over-talk. One of us has to talk at a time.
Okay.
So anyway, did you join the service? And do you find that most trans people join the service to fight against being trans, hoping that that will cure them?
It's a very hard thing to say. The people have so many reasons for joining the service. I mean, don't forget, back then during the Vietnam era, being transgender was one of the poorest paying jobs you could get. Being a transgendered activist has never paid anything.
No,
and
I'm well aware of that. I am well aware of that.
And back then, yeah, and back then, if people found out that you were transgender and you had a normal job, then you'd get fired.
Mm-hmm.
So the history of our community has been that up to more recent times of being a pretty poor community. Our roots came from abject poverty. And
well, yeah,
we
but no one
together,
goes into the service to make money since it doesn't pay well.
Sure they do.
So what
sure
I'm asking is, I mean, maybe it's the last resort, but what I'm asking is, for example, would trans women, in your experience, enter a hyper-masculine field like the armed forces to try to cure themselves of their innate femininity and become real men, yeah, that kind of thing?
Well, oh, don't forget, all professions back then for transgender people were hyper-masculine. There weren't too many that weren't. And
well,
you really
no,
had,
yes,
you really
but no,
had no choice.
I remember, you and I are not that, you are 10 years older than I am, and there
yeah.
were transgender beauticians then, and hairdressers and everything. So, I mean, there were fields of endeavor where trans women, at least, could unfold with relative safety. But, you know, I would imagine that some people entered the service hoping to, quote-unquote, cure themselves of being innately trans. What would you say to that?
I would say that that's accurate if you put it as some people, yes, but certainly not all. There's people that joined the service because they were patriotic. There's people that joined the service because they wanted to have a career, couldn't have a career in any other field without the danger of getting fired.
I would imagine it would be worse still if people discerned that a service member was trans. That person would go to jail, wouldn't that person?
Well, people have been, transgender people have been serving in the military since the Revolutionary War. So,
yes, many women passed as men and fought side by side with men and were, in effect, trans men. And that famous surgeon from the Civil War who was only discovered to be female after his death, you know.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've been doing this for, they've been in every conflict that America's had. There's been transgender people. I mean, you know, it's difficult to say exactly why they joined in the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. They needed the money, and they couldn't get a job any other place.
Well, that also applies to non-trans folk, too.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. So,
you found that veterans who transitioned were pariahs and were not being helped by the VA, the Veterans Administration, and you did something about it.
Yes, I did. And so did Monica Helms. And before I get off that, I'd like to announce to everybody that Monica Helms is in the hospital right now, and she's facing open heart surgery on Tuesday, on the 27th, I think. And if you have her telephone number or contact, or you know her by Facebook, I'm sure that she'd love to be able to hear from you before she goes into the operation. And,
well, would you like to
that,
announce her contact information? Give it to us.
I did not really ask her for permission of that.
Oh, okay.
So, and she right now she's under a lot of stress. So, I think she's on Facebook, and you can look her up on Facebook or Twitter by going and putting in a name and doing a search for her.
What is her name?
Monica Helms, and she was also the inventor of the transgender flag.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Pale blue, pale pink, and white in the middle. Oh, great.
That's right. And she's been an activist for years, and she's written two books that describe exactly what happened when we created the Transgendered American Veterans Association. So, and everybody in the community knows her pretty much. And I'm sure that if you sent a notification to her over Facebook, it would reach her. And just words of encouragement and love and caring.
All right. So you heard that, folks. Go to Monica Helms, H-E-L-M-S, and look her up and be kind and send her words of encouragement. And God will repay you, one can but hope.
We hope, yes.
But so now, transgender people who were veterans were not getting help from the VA regarding hormone therapy or other transgender medical procedures. What did you do about that?
21 years ago. And when we found out that they were not getting equal service in VA facilities, they'd go to one hospital and they could get their hormones if they were prescribed by a physician and or a therapist. And they take that same prescription to another VA facility or hospital, and they would refuse to give them their hormones. So we found out that was happening all over the country. And we formed a group to be able to become a voice for the transgendered veterans and to stop that type of discrimination.
How did you stop
it? Well, that's what we asked too. How do you stop it? Well, there's a group of people that were getting some benefits, even though they were transgender. And of course, they wanted us to keep quiet because if we did anything, then of course they might lose their benefits if we caused a stink about it. And Monica and I just said, well, okay, you're going to have to live with it because we're just going to do something. So what we did was, first thing we did was we introduced the fact that to the transgender community and America that there is such a thing as a transgendered veteran. Nobody ever thought of it. Nobody ever thought there were transgendered veterans. So it was a whole new thing. And like many things in the transgender community at that time, you know, the transgender community is one of those communities where if you think something is good and that it's going to benefit somebody in the community, chances are you're probably one of the first people that have ever come up with that idea. So pursue it.
As the first transgender television journalist, I think I can relate.
Yeah. Exactly. There's a lot of first in the transgender community if you're an activist. So we decided to have a transgendered veterans march to the wall in Washington, D.C. And that's what we did. We called for a walk to the wall, to the Vietnam Memorial. And we had 60 people, 60 transgendered veterans that showed up in Washington. And, of course, at the time, they were thinking about having a transgendered march in Washington. And everybody said, oh, no, you can't do that. Don't do that. And Monica and I just said, well, if we're the only ones there that are doing this, then it'll be the first time. But somebody has to do it. So we ended up having about 60 transgendered veterans. And we had a wonderful time on that weekend.
Did it change anything?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's transgender community. Believe me. What we did was we laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. We were the first GLBT group to ever lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And when we did that, there were the stands or the seating area to view this ceremony, which is a remarkable ceremony, they were full of people. And most of those people were in the GLBT community and working for groups like HRC, Human Rights Campaign.
At that time, they did not like trans folk, because here in New York, we were desperate to get transgender inclusion in the gay rights bill, and they wouldn't give it to us.
Yes.
And as Sylvia Rivera, one of the original Stonewall Rebellion folk, was dying, literally was dying in the hospital, she was arguing with them that we had to have inclusion, and they were hemming and hawing and saying, well, you know, I don't know, it's bad for the rest of us. You people are really out there. I don't know.
I knew Sylvia. I've met her twice and had dinner with her at least once. And she was a remarkable, remarkable woman.
Yes, indeed she was. I knew her quite well, and she was a genius. Yeah. She did not go to school. Sadly, she started hustling on 42nd Street at the age of 11, but she was brilliant. She had bad grammar, and she lived on the streets, but she was a brilliant, brilliant strategist and a great human being, and I'm desperately glad to have known her and to have been considered one of her friends.
Well, I viewed her a little bit differently. I thought all those things about her and the things that I heard, but the person I met was so full of fire for the transgender community. I mean, she was on fire. You could see it coming out of
her
eyes.
Well, that's exactly what I just said.
Well, in a way, yeah. That's what hit me, is that she was the activist. She didn't stop thinking for 1 minute about what she could do.
No, and she was brilliant, and she had immense courage, both moral and physical. She had great courage. She was brilliant.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. What gives you your courage?
Say again?
What gives you your courage?
I felt like there had to be change. I knew it right off the bat. I didn't want to continue to live in the shadows as a cross-dresser all my life, because I knew that I was not a cross-dresser, that I was transsexual. Yet, the pattern of my life and the things that I had done, being in the military, having a family, being married, having children, it made it impossible for me to be able to come out without losing the support that the children needed to be for education and being the head of the household. So I felt strapped in. And I said, well, this is not good, that I'm not the only one that's in this position, and there has to be a way for people to be able to express themselves. Otherwise, they'll continue to commit suicide and hurt themselves and just have a bad life. So I made
not to mention damage to their families by being in a bad temper and insulting their wives and kids, and because when someone is hurt and unhappy, they tend to make others hurt and unhappy.
That's right. And there's nothing worse than wasting your life. It's just a shame that so many people back then were wasting their life. They were forced into situations of compromising who they are all the time. And you can take just so much of that.
Absolutely.
Before you have to do something about it. Well, my solution to that was to form support groups. I lived in Syracuse, New York. There was no support. I formed a support group called Eon, Expressing Our Nature. And out of that support group, five other support groups started in upstate New York where there was nothing. And that type of success breeds success. When you're that successful at activism, you continue to start getting more and more involved. I got involved at the national level. I got involved with national organizations like the International Foundation for Gender Education. Renaissance group in Pennsylvania with Joanne Roberts. I got involved in all these organizations and got to know all the people, and they got to know me. And I never stopped pushing for more valid positions in society for transgender people. And it was something I believed in. I mean, we have a place in society. There's a reason why we're here. And all these people that are trying to erase us, it's so ridiculous because they have no control over it. God made us. God made us transgender. We were born this way. And they have no control. They'd be better off going to the churches and praying for God to turn around and erase us because they can't do it.
Don't give them any ideas, please.
Well, let them try, because I know I have a pretty good idea that if there's a God out there, he's on our side, not on theirs.
And these people are very... They'll go down in history along with the Nazis, with the people, the judges who hanged witches in Salem. These people are very much on the wrong side of history, and they don't seem to realize it, or they don't care. Out of the angels,
well,
because they're insane, and there's that man in I don't know where he's from, who said his goal was to do away with transgender in the U.S. Now, what exactly does that mean? Kill us? Put us in concentration camps? What did he mean by that, I wonder?
Well, you might as well be listening to a cow bray at the moon, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know us as transgender people. He doesn't understand why we're here. He doesn't understand that God made us. He thinks that we all affected each other and spread some sort of disease, transgender disease that we caught. I mean, people like that, they're not worth our time. What is
No, but the problem is they have constituents and they are dangerous. They also have guns.
So,
and they have the power of the law sometimes. They change the laws themselves. Look at all those laws against care for transgender youth in red states. That's very dangerous. And what's next? Denying care for transgender adults? And then what? And then what?
What's
I mean,
dangerous?
And then what exactly?
Yeah, what is dangerous is transgendered people that sit back and don't do anything about it. And that's what's been happening. There's plenty of things
that they're afraid.
Can do.
And some of them are stealth, and they are afraid of losing their jobs and their housing and all sorts of things.
Still?
And so...
Still? I mean, still...
Excuse me, they
is
are...
Is that true?
Of course.
Look, the second richest woman in America, or in Washington, D.C., worth billions of dollars, is transgender.
Well, then she should distribute some of that wealth to the poorer trans folk. And since
she does.
Poverty is rife in the trans community, let her start giving, you know?
She does. She does. And in many other ways, she benefits human beings, too.
Well, what is her name?
Martine Rothblatt. She
Martine Rothblatt.
Yes. Look her up. TED Talk. And you can see her on her TED Talk. Yeah, she's true.
I would imagine that this is family money that she inherited.
No.
Isn't it?
No. She's a genius. I believe she graduated from MIT. And she's a friggin' genius. And she is a committed genius. And she's an activist. And she's somebody that you don't hear a lot about.
This is the first time hearing of her, and I'm well aware of the activism in our community.
She wrote a seminal book called The Apartheid of Gender. And it was a remarkable book. And that's how I met her. So she's a remarkable person. And I mean, she's doing more for mankind than anybody that I have ever met.
Then let's call it humankind.
Well, she owns a huge company. She just opened up a company here in Raleigh, in Research Triangle Park, that's worth something like $300 billion.
Based in Raleigh, North Carolina, is that it?
Yeah, yeah. She's doing research here in Raleigh, in Research Triangle Park, because of the pharmaceutical industry here, that's stationed here. And she opened up a pharmaceutical plant and laboratories to produce drugs for diseases that they have no cures for.
God
and
bless
she's
her.
Been
good for her.
Very successful. And she has a bigger installation in Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C. I mean, we shouldn't have to worry about this that much anymore. We have other laws on the books that says, like in New York, you can't fire a transgender person for being transgender, facing the government and the state.
No, but they always find a way if they want to. You know,
And if you're careful and you document it right, that closes the door on that. Believe me, we're in a lot better shape than we were 20 years ago.
Oh, I'm well aware of that. God knows.
Yeah.
I once lost a job selling cosmetics in the 80s. I was selling cosmetics in New Jersey, and I went to the bathroom, and someone in the next stall heard me urinate, and it was a little too male and strong for what a female sounds like when she urinates. It didn't tinkle. It fell like a waterfall. She apparently told Human Resources, and I was fired that afternoon.
And how long ago was that?
Circa 1985, give or take.
Do you think that would happen today?
No. They might think of some other reason, but they wouldn't dare say, you know, get out of here, you mad freak. They didn't say that then. But you know what I mean. It was not a pleasant afternoon.
Thousands of people in the IT industry that have good jobs and are well respected as employees, and some of them are even CEOs. So it's a lot less prevalent today. And
well, that was 38
right now,
years ago. So yeah.
So I mean, we haven't been doing this for. I've been doing this for 55 years. You know, to say that the same thing exists today that existed back then is right off the wall. You can't say that. It doesn't happen. It's like to turn around and it's like turning around and saying to me, "Well, for the last 55 years, you've wasted your time." Transgendered activists.
Well,
have
no, but
time.
You have to admit that at this point, all those red states and all those people legislating against us are making it even worse, if possible. Than it was 55 years ago.
They're making it worse for transgender children right now. They aren't making it worse for that much worse for transgendered adults, unless you live in Florida or maybe Texas. But the reason why that is happening that way is because these people are cowards. They're using the transgender community as a vote getter, as a political toy. And we've always been a political pawn, transgender people have. We've always been thrown under the bus politically and can no longer, because we have gotten laws in places like New York and most of the East Coast and the West Coast and the large population states that say you can't discriminate against a person because they're transgender anymore. You can't fire them because they're transgender. And they have to make the same equal pay and everything else. We spent 55 years getting those laws and suffering to get those laws. And those cowards cannot go after us anymore. So what do? They go after the kids. They go after the kids and their parents. They're cowards. They're blowhards and cowards. So what do we have to do? We have to expose them. We have to expose them. I think differently about a lot of people. Most people who a lot of people in the transgender community are still stuck with this thing in their head that says, I must be in the shadows. I must not make too much noise. I must not kick up a storm. I've never been like that, ever.
Neither have
I,
obviously.
You know this transgender woman that showed up at the White House out in the lawn and exposed her breasts?
Yeah.
Have you been reading the stuff that's going online about that?
No.
Well, 50% of our community is condemning her and saying, oh, my God, how could you possibly do that? You were invited to a pride celebration.
Well, it was a little crude. Come on. If a harlot did that, people would be outraged, too. Anyone who did that.
And that's exactly what 50% of the people out there are saying right now.
And maybe they're right. It was pretty crude.
Well, maybe they are right. But thing is different strokes for different folks. And what's happened is younger people, they're online going, what's the big deal? They're just tits. What's the matter? Were you so ashamed of me? What's the problem? I mean, when I was 30 years ago, women were exposing their breasts all the time. And they were activists that were, wanted to change the laws for women. I mean, you go to Sturgis, South Dakota, to the bike rallies, they push women up on the stage, and all you can hear is, show us yours. I mean, this is normal. It's normal in life. Only because we've been beaten down so much and made ashamed of ourselves do we react in a negative way to this too. And what activists should do is they should take advantage of the situation. The way I think is this: if this affects our community this way, that it splits it up, if this affects our community, that it turns conservatives against us, then I'm all for a march in Washington, D.C., where we have 500 or 10,000 transgender people down there, and we all get there, and the press is there, and we all drop our blouses and expose our tits.
We're good with that.
Then let's see what they're going to say. Then
they would say these people are insane and they're vulgar and they don't understand civilized behavior. That's what they would say.
Or they're tired of getting treated this way. They're tired.
I don't see how affronting what most people would consider public decency is a positive thing. I think that would be maybe the worst thing we could do, and that would marginalize us even more.
Maybe.
I think.
It might also wake people up a little bit and say, hey,
to what?
This may be 1% to 2% of the population, but they're willing to put their lives on the line.
They're also
willing
to affront public decency. You can't. See, then we would play right into the hands of the radical right. If we did something like that, they'd say, see, these people are insane. They don't understand civilization. Look what they just did. You can't civilize these animals. They're out of control. That's what they would say. They wouldn't say, wow, right on, sister.
No, they say that already. They say that already. There's, look at, these are the people that turn around and say that you and I are not women. We're still men that dress as women.
So what? So let them.
Even though we have our own breasts, even though we
I don't give a good goddamn in hell what these idiots think of me or anyone else.
Well, then there you go. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying, is who cares what they're going to say? Who cares?
No, but I mean, this would really be too much for a lot of people who have no knowledge of trans folk. It would be so shocking and so outrageous. It would just not do us any favors, you know? It just wouldn't. And that woman who did that at the White House, if a man took off his shirt in the White House, that would be pretty outrageous, too. That was just
she was standing
a bad
right next
decision.
She was flanked. She was flanked on either side by two female to males who had no breasts and had chests like men.
Yes,
if they want to think we're men, then and they want to arrest us.
That's just
in,
vulgar.
In situations
okay, you
like
don't
bathrooms
do that.
And stuff.
You don't do that. That is just crude. That is not decent. That is not polite. You don't take off your clothes in public that way unless it's appropriate. I know what is appropriate. I get it. But, I mean, you, that does not help us. That made
well,
us seem
not,
just what they're saying
we are. You're not taking off your clothes, Dan, Diana. All you're doing is exposing your breasts, not the rest of
Well,
your
I choose not to. I'm entitled to the privacy and dignity of my body, and I choose
okay.
not to.
Right. So there's a can be had about this entire subject. What it means is that it separates us in a way that they want us to be separated. They want us to be exactly 50-50 if they can make it. This is their mantra. This is what Trump does. He is the president of separation, as opposed to Biden, who is the president of unification.
Yes,
so,
I agree.
Okay, so the logical thing is how do we unify with that concept? How do we make that work for us? It's the way that a transgender...
To my way of thinking, the way we do it is to behave with dignity and decorum and show that we are civilized people who understand that, you know, exposing breasts has nothing to do with liberation. It's just a rude, vulgar thing to do, and that we should strive to change the law in more conventional, more acceptable ways. Because if you're a housewife in Muskogee and you know nothing about trans people and you see this, you're not going to say, wow, yeah, all right. You're going to say, that was so awful. How could that woman do that? You know, you're not going to be impressed. You're going to think that's really trashy and just not right, you know?
Well, okay, that's your point of view, and that's certainly your valid point of view, and it's valid for you. I think sitting down and talking to people and going over it, here these people are causing us to have our own angst and our own community to break 50-50 on something like this.
What do you mean break 50-50? What do you mean?
Well, 50% of the people are thinking like you about that. And 50% who are much younger than you and I are thinking, what's the big deal? If this pisses them off, that's exactly what I want to do, is piss
I do not. I don't think provoking these people is a great idea. I think, and feeding their disdain for us, that doesn't
they
seem a positive.
They think provoking us is a good idea, and to the point where they're actually going after our children, trans children. If that doesn't, that isn't provoking us, then what does it take to provoke us?
Well, I'm sorry, but I just don't think it was the right thing for that lady to do. I just don't.
Okay. That's your belief and your image. The younger people of today are saying, no, that's not necessarily my image.
I'm sure many younger people are saying what I'm saying, that that was just rude and trashy and not decent and just a dumb thing to do because it made us all seem like I don't know what. But that's,
do the young people that have a different idea about that, are they to be respected or condemned?
No, they're to be respected, but young people, just as old people, are not a monolith. There are many diverse opinions among the young as there is among the old, and you cannot say, well, all young people think it was great. No, they don't all think it was great. Some do, some don't. Just as older people, you and I are baby boomers, and you think it was great, and I think it was outrageous and vulgar and rude, and that's fine, and that's diversity, and that's what this country's about. And that is what Trump is trying to stamp out, diversity. And that is fascism, when everyone has to think along a certain line or else. And that is wrong. So, you know, and enough about this lady and her breasts. Enough. So what do you think the future will hold?
What I'm saying is activism has to find a place to get going again in the transgender community. Whether it's showing your breast or whether it's what we used to do. what we used to do when we were being closed out by HRC and they wouldn't let us in the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I was a member on the founding board of the National Transgender Advocacy Coalition. And what we did was we talked about this. And I was in charge of the activism committee for that group and that organization. And they turned to me and they said, well, what should we do? How do we fight the human rights campaign with millions of dollars? How do we get them to include transgendered people? How do we get them to change their mind? And I turned around and I said, well, they exist because they have millions of dollars. And how do they get the millions of dollars? They go and they have these dinners and these raffles at the dinners. And all the gays, rich gays and lesbians go to these dinners to be seen and to talk to politicians. And they contribute millions and thousands of dollars, thousands and millions of dollars to the human rights campaign, which is what feeds them. And they don't know what's going on with the transgender community. But, hey, how about let's hitting them in their pocketbooks? Now, everybody just, at that meeting, everybody just looked and went, well, Angela, what are you talking about? I says, let's go to one of these dinners. Let's have a picket outside the door of this human rights campaign dinner. And let's hand out leaflets and notify the members that are going in there to these dinners, the rich gays and lesbians and bisexuals. Let's let them know that HRC is stopping transgender from people from being included in ENDA.
I think that's a great idea. Now, that's a good idea to me.
And not only that,
everyone remained top with their clothes on. Okay, good. I like that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So now what happened was I also said, we're going to rent a room in that hotel, just like everybody else. And we're going to call it the Transgender Hospitality Suite. And in our brochure and handout, we're going to invite all those people to come up to the Transgender Hospitality Suite to talk to us. And we'll convince them that we should be included. And that happened in Raleigh, the first one, the next one in Atlanta, the next one in Chicago. The next one was at the National Dinner in Washington, D.C. We picketed every one of those until HRC turned around and said, okay, that's enough. Okay, we understand where you're coming from. And we were getting a lot of gays and lesbians, rich gays and lesbians, that would feed us money and contribute to us. They're saying, is this true? Is this true? Are you stopping from transgender people from being a part of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? Barney Frank and the members of it and the board of directors of HRC. Oh, well, gee, it's not like we're against being transgender, but they shouldn't be in the employment. Well, their contributions dropped off radically. And that changed history in our community.
With Barney Frank. He appeared somewhere, and I was there. And I had words with him about that and finished by saying, well, I guess you're too busy with your rent boys to care about the transgender community. He's non-existent, lips pursed, much like a duck's ass, and he was quite put out by what I had said. Well, too bad, you know.
Now, Barney Frank was at the Raleigh HRC dinner. There was three transgender women chasing him across the floor as he was trying to get away from them.
Yeah, I know. And he used to give me dirty looks at parades and everything else. I'm well aware of that.
Yeah, I mean, Barney Frank was one of the members of the Mattachine Society, which
no wonder he was so
that transgender people were no good. Sylvia Rivera hated Mattachine Society.
Well, they also tried to squash the Stonewall Rebellion. The second night, they posted a flyer on the door of the Stonewall.
Yeah.
Please, we plead with our people. Do not rebel. Do not, I mean,
gee,
whatever.
Doesn't that sound a little bit Doesn't that sound just a little bit like don't expose your breasts? Just a little bit.
No, I am entitled to the privacy and dignity of my body. I don't want to show my breasts to people, only special people, in the privacy of my bedroom.
Well,
years ago, I modeled for a designer
named
Jeremy Stewart, the Fish Bear, who's a great guy. And I would say, you know, this neckline, it's a little low. I mean, could we raise it a little, please? And he would. And he said, but, you know, you have nice breasts. Okay. I was a member of the Stonewall Democrats. It's a Democratic club here in New York. And
yeah.
When I was 48 years old, I'm 67 now, they said to me, and they were serious, you know, we're having a party for some political men. We want you to jump out of a cake. I absolutely lost. How dare you? I am not some hired stripper at a bachelor party. How dare you people say this to me? I quit the club. I was incandescent with rage at this insult. I did not appreciate being asked to jump out of a cake like some cheap whore they'd hired for the night. With my apologies to whores, cheap or otherwise, you have your rights too. But I was just really outraged. What is this all about? Why am I telling you this?
I'm not sure. I know.
No,
one
but
thing.
My point is,
even
a lot of guys sexualize trans women and objectify them, and I say no. I say no.
And a lot of trans women take advantage of that
because they have no
option.
And
they look forward to it because it's the only. A lot of trans women look forward to it because it's the only relationship that they're going to have.
Not to mention the only means of survival. Financially,
that's well. Even if they don't have a sugar daddy, let me tell you something. If you go to a transgender convention today, like the Keystone Convention up in Pennsylvania, or some other convention, you're going to find, like the first event, that there is on a Saturday night when they have the big dinner and the guest speaker, you're going to see more cleavage there than you have ever seen. In a Hollywood setting at the Oscars.
I guess.
Transgender
that's
women,
not my style, but God bless anyone who does it. God love
it. Well, that's exactly what they do. I'm telling you what they do. I mean,
good.
That's exactly it.
I think that's great. If that's, look, I'm totally into whatever people want to do. You want to show your tits to people? Do it, but not at the White House, not when the reporters are around. We are almost out of time. I hope you'll be back soon to continue this conversation about memory politics. And how do people contact you?
Well, they can use my name shortened a little bit because I'm on AOL. BRITFETHER@AOL.com. If anybody's
okay.
In trouble or any veterans want to talk to me, they can call me on my cell phone at 919-291-3512. And I'm on Facebook under Angela Brightfeather. Just do a search and asked to be friended and that you heard me tonight, and I'd be happy to friend you and we can talk about things then.
Sounds great. Okay, now, if you had one thing to say to trans folk out there listening regarding courage and activism and a sense of self, what would it be?
You're more powerful than you know. And your transgender women and men are more powerful than they give themselves credit for. Use that power. Create change. Use that power to shake up the left or the right. Use that power to bring transgender people together. Never say anything bad about another transgendered person. Never. You can help it. Don't do it. We have to be unified in what we do. As far as activism goes, find a way to do activism and always add some aspect to it that makes it fun. Activism should be fun. Shouldn't be, there's some hard work involved in it, and there's some organization, but always have fun included. And get active. Get ahead of these people. Take back the narrative. They have taken the narrative. They're using it against us to create lies and laws that are based on lies. In order to stop this, we have to take back that narrative. However,
okay.
Whatever it takes, go out and do it.
But stay safe, people. Don't be foolhardy, and remember, you have to stay safe and use your head. No empty gestures, just to make a point and then somebody shoots you. So careful, folks. Right? Am I right?
Do what you know is going to be effective. Do what you know is going to be effective.
Anyway, yeah. My name is Diana Montford. This has been the Diana Montford Show. My guest has been lifelong transgender activist Ms. Angela Brightfeather. Hopefully she will come back very soon and continue this conversation. And anyway, listen, even if no one else loves you, I love you, and be safe and be
smart.
I'll be
back on request. I'll be back.
There you go.
Hear me. Yeah.
There you go. And take care of yourself.
Thanks for the opportunity, Diana.
My pleasure. And talk to you again soon.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay. Hercules, take it away.
Hey, thank you, Diana, and thank you, Angela, for a thought-provoking and interesting show. And thanks to all our listeners, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers and all the fathers in people's lives. Good night, everybody.